Good evening. May 5th, 2011. James McCanny here with my Science Hour. And tonight I'll be getting back to real science topics. Unfortunately, in previous weeks, I've had to divert onto some of the ridiculous reporting that had been going on, but sometimes that's necessary. And my audience, luckily, is well-educated, so in fact, it's very interesting getting the feedback from the audience on things that they observe, and then they report back to me via email and other communications. Sometimes I talk to customers relative to, say, they ordered a product, and I get to chat with them a little bit, one issue or another. And but it's very interesting to see the commentary of my audience. And so at any rate, but right now, this show, I'll be getting back to some topics, very important pending topics. Tonight's main science topic will be dealing with how are earthquakes made, how are man-made versus natural earthquakes, what's the difference. How can man make earthquakes? How can men, with their equipment, et cetera, how can they induce earthquakes? That seems to be something that's almost Herculean in nature and in scope. How is this possible? So I'll be talking about that. I'll be talking about some of the misconceptions in standard science. I'll be talking about food shortages coming up a little bit on that topic. So let me just start going through some of my bullet items that I have here. Right now, the U.S., if you talk to farmers around the country, farmers in many of the mid-states would already be planting due to the wetness of the season and also in some places cold. Remember that corn needs a growing season of 90 days above 70 degree temperature, or some say 72. Corn is a warm climate crop, so to grow it in the northern, the temperate climates, remember it was first grown down in Central America, where it's still grown, in, around the all the way to the equator, and many people would be surprised that to find out that corn is much bigger and more natural there. Mexico last year had an event where the hybrid GMO food and seed companies tried to come in and force seed of the hybrid GMO type into Mexico, and the Mexicans resisted. And I don't know where that ever ended up. I'll have to do a little more research into that. But corn is a warm climate plant. And as I said, it needs 90 days of above 70 degree temperature, and that includes nighttime. So you can see we're nowhere near that. If it's planted too soon in those early days, of the formative days of corn, if it gets cold, then the crop goes bad. If it gets too much water early, it's very sensitive. We've just been amazingly fortunate in past decades that the corn crops have actually been quite successful in the United States, and with modern farming, they're more than successful. But the problem is now you have Frankenstein corn, which is not fit for human consumption. So at any rate, the point is that with growing seasons almost non-existent in some other parts of the world, with floods, with other types of natural disaster, including the oil, the lack of hot water in the North Atlantic current stream going up to England and that part of the world, there is going to be a food shortage. So at any rate, people should become prepared. That's all I can tell you. I'm not going to talk about the Osama bin Laden thing. It just is getting certainly plenty of airtime on other shows. The only thing I'm going to say is that with that dominating the news on all fronts, other news has simply fallen off the deep end on the far end. Japan radiation is not being talked about. The Gulf oil pollution and both the water and in the air is not being talked about. These problems do not go away just because the major news media does not report on them. There's a misconception, and I know this just from my own sampling, that the Osama bin Laden thing really put people back on their heels, as if, gee, everything is okay now, everything is going to be better, we have a president who's going to manage tough situations, etc. I don't want to go into all of that politicizing over this anyway, but the point that I want to make is that the real news stories have fallen off the charts and are simply not reported. And food shortage, the upcoming summer, is just the other thing I want to talk about. It's something I was talking with another fan this past week, and that fan mentioned there's some principles in biology. They're very basic principles. If you take any species, I remember it was done with oak trees one time. If you left oak trees, and that was the only plant on earth, how fast it would come to dominate the earth. And so this is true of animals, of birds, of any type of species, how fast that particular species would overtake the entire earth if there were no competition. And in the case of human beings, in the case of the animal world, it's kind of eat or be eaten, in a sense, and there's a balance in the food chain. There's an island up in Lake Superior, it's called Isle Royale. Scientists have studied this for a long time, this island, and there's a moose and wolf sanctuary on an island. So the moose population will grow and flourish, and when the wolf population is down, and so since the moose are flourishing, then the wolf population will rise up, and the wolves will flourish because there's a lot of food. That's their main source of food is the moose population. Well, what happens then is the wolves become flourished, then they bring down the moose population. Well, what happens? The wolves don't have anything to eat, so then the wolf population diminishes, and then this cycle goes back. It's kind of an oscillatory cycle for both the moose and the wolves, and somehow nature keeps this in balance. But when man oversteps the natural influences that keep these populations in check, and in this case man, it's easy to see that all of a sudden the earth will become overpopulated. The country I want to talk specifically about, actually there's a number of them, England, France, the United States, Australia. What's going on, and very much behind the scenes, these countries are being flooded with third world country residents. And nothing against any one of these groups, but just to take a specific example, as of about last year, there were probably 40 million Mexicans, nationals in the United States. Many of them trying to get legal status, probably the vast majority without. The official population given by the Census Bureau was something like 5 million, but the real population is that, remember, Mexico is the most populous of the Latin American countries with about 110 million population, actually about one-third of the United States. Well, as the border laxness occurred, there were probably within the last few years up to 40 million Mexicans in the United States. And, of course, in Mexico, the poor people lived with a mortality rate of about 50%. Coming to the United States, they no longer have that mortality rate, but they're continuing to propagate at the same rate. And so you have a situation where the population of the United States just a few short years ago was 280 million, now raising, and this is not in the official census, but raising to about, within a number of years, to 320 million, but within another 5 years, probably being raised up to about 400 million, which is an unsustainable number. Why is this being done? Well, why is it being allowed? There are all kinds of problems. Actually, Mexico is an extremely wealthy country. It's just that all the wealth is in the hands of about 2% of the population. So the Mexicans would do quite well there if they could wrench the money out of the hands of the very few percent. And this is generally true throughout Latin America. But the point is that here's where you start to see a Marxist philosophy of the so-called leaders of the United States who are linked with the leadership of the world. And these are strictly scientific statuses or concepts. These have nothing to do with race or racism or any other kind of politically correctness, whatever. These are simply well-established biological and scientific traits. And the Marxists know this quite well. So to the concept, remember, of a Marxist, of which we are really have in the government of the United States, which are the puppets of the New World Order, remember that they have to bring the United States into the dirt before they can raise up the New World Order. So this is part of the destruction of the United States. So you would bring in and allow to come into the country as many people as possible. And you would do it under the guise of helping people out. Well, the reality is that in a few short years, it's not going to be helping those people or anybody else, because the United States is very quickly going to ruin. But here's the point. The Marxist philosophy is that you bring the world down to ruin and ashes. And I'm talking literally. Ruin and ashes, and that's what they did in Japan. There's no question in my mind that the Japanese earthquakes of March 11th this year were man-made, and the disaster, the follow-up disaster, the destruction of that country. The Marxist philosophy is that you just take a world and bring it down to just ashes and ruin, and just to where people are crawling. In doing so, you bring about what their goal is of population control. And then out of this remaining population, they rise up and build a utopian society. This is the sick and distorted view of the banking community. And, of course, with them as in charge. So I'm not going to say a lot more about that. All I'm going to tell you is that when you see blanket news coverage, as with the Osama bin Laden deal, and all of the other issues falling off the map, it's like Japan doesn't count anymore. Australia doesn't count anymore in the news media. New Zealand, England, Northern Europe, Scandinavia, all of these countries just dropping off the map in terms of the major national and international crisis that is impending with food shortage, etc., etc. So, and then this well on its way towards arriving in the good old United States. And that's one of the points I want to make, that people just, you have to understand why this is being done, who is doing it, and what the ultimate goal is. And it's a mad scientist. It's the Dr. Strangelove attitude that certain people will build cave cities, and then they will live in there and live through the ultimate disaster to come out the other side with only a few people remaining in Earth. And those that remain will then be the cobbler's helper, so to speak, to help, and they will rebuild this utopian society. The reason I'm mentioning this is because in this bizarre, what I would call not Comet Elenin situation, where just massive amounts of attention on the internet and through government-sponsored, I call them government-sponsored, I would more correctly, New World Order disinformation-sponsored websites, people trying to pretend to use my material and then claim that this Comet Elenin is going to cause all kinds of disasters on certain dates with alignments, etc. And now there are videos on YouTube, 45-minute long videos that are professionally produced, and the ultimate goal is to convince you that, yes, disaster is on its way, 2012, and Planet X. But the ultimate point is that you, the public, will be up on the top of the earth here. There will be disaster, but there are people that are going to handle this. The raging crowds, the crowds that are going crazy. But in all of this, you should be proud and happy, according to this video, you should be proud and happy to give your children to the cave city dwellers who will use your children to propagate the next future generations after the earthwide disaster. Now, this is, you can go find these videos on YouTube and watch them, and watch the distorted information. There's very inaccurate information many times. For example, they talk about Harrington, the National Observatory astronomer back in the 1980s and early 90s, who apparently was on a quest, a NASA-paid program, to search for something called Planet X in the southern sky, only visible during the month of May and June. But anyway, they say that this was in the constellation Orion. Well, Orion is not in the southern sky. Orion is a winter constellation in the northern hemisphere. So where on earth do they get these? But see, there's a lot of incorrect information, but woven in with a lot of misinformation. But remember that the end goal is to convince people that, number one, Planet X is coming in 2012, and when it does, you should be very happy and proud to give your children to those people in the cave cities who will manage and bring out the future generations. This is a Marxist concept. It's a very sick, Dr. Strangelove type of mentality, where ultimately the certain ruling classes come out on the other side. But it has to do with all of these things that I'm talking about. So when you see that the United States or England or Australia or any of these countries are being flooded with large populations, I'm not talking just a few, I'm talking about tens of millions of people coming in large quantities into this country, that there's a purpose for that. There's a reason. It's being not just allowed, it's being promoted. Okay, so enough of that. I'm going to talk a little bit about the new China railway, Beijing to Lhasa. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. But anyway, Beijing to Tibet Railway. It's about 2,000 kilometers long. The cars on this are pressurized. They had to cross some of the most foreboding mountain ranges on the planet. The railway goes to 16,000 feet. And because of that, like I say, the cabins on these are pressurized. I appreciate this. A fan sent in the reference on this, and it was a very nice set of pictures that went along with this email. The Beijing to Lhasa Railway, there's a tunnel through the mountains almost 2 miles long. The Chinese built this amazing railroad over some of the most sensitive eco-sensitive areas of tundra in the world, over mountains, insurpassable areas, just an impossible task, but it's finally there, but something you may want to take a look at, do an internet search. It's the Beijing to Lhasa, that's LHASA railway in China. One of the, truly the a feat that probably is akin to the Great Wall of China. Probably not quite the Great Wall of China covers 6,000 miles and was man-made. over thousands of years, but certainly worth recognizing. Just a quick note here, there's a hidden law on pensions, and here's how it goes. If there is a pension fund that is underfunded, that is, that the company responsible for funding the pension fund, if that pension fund becomes underfunded by federal law, the standard federal law allows what they call the seven-year rule, that allows the company over a seven-year period to catch up on the funding. Well, next year when they're underfunded, they're going to be 7 years behind on that. But in the fine print, there's a clause that allows the company, if they make an application by just signing a piece of paper, they can extend that underfunding status to 15 years, meaning that and it doesn't really say how much underfunded they're talking about. It just says underfunded. So that's something that as pension funds become harder hit because bad investments and the crumbling economy, because as with any investment, it depends on the stability of the economy. Well, a pension fund is only as good as the economy that it lives in. So at any rate, Congress allowing a very strange form of credit, you might call it, to allow pension funds to be underfunded for extended long periods of time. Just a quick Comet Elanin update. And now I don't want to talk about Comet Elanin itself because it's a non-issue. It was never an issue. As best as I can tell, Comet Elanin, if it is real, which it seems it is, it was discovered, all of the announcements seem legitimate, but it's an extremely little comet. But for the internet activity, I don't call it the Comet Elanin a comet that might cause a disaster. I more likely call it the Comet Elanin phenomenon, given the absolutely huge amount of internet press it got, including a lot of web pages trying to use my name, my work. And then, of course, the NASA white hats come along and say, well, there's no problem with that. There never was. But here's what's interesting. Here's what I want to point out tonight about Comet Elanin. Given all of the misinformation and then how it's being used, as I said, to promote that you should give your kids up to the grandiose and good people in the cave cities that will guard your kids and use them to procreate the next generation. That's part of it. But here, in this milieu of misinformation, NASA repeatedly, now this has come from numerous directions, so it's not just one quote, one person. NASA has claimed, which they have done in the past, that they have no equipment and do not look at comets. And I got an interesting set of emails from a fan who had started to email one of the NASA higher-ups. And then the response came back that NASA doesn't take pictures of comets. They don't really have much interest in comets at all. And that they would point to reliable sources such as the Harvard Smithsonian. It's like a registrar for small comets and solar system objects. So if they're discovered, that's who you would notify, and they would calculate orbits, etc. But I find that extremely strange because NASA has a program, it's called the Near Earth Object Program, and its charter is to know everything that's going on out there. Now, there's another issue here that on a mountain in Hawaii called Haleakala on the island of Maui, there's an entire set of high-quality infrared and optical and visible light optical telescopes. And their entire job is to look for military targets. This would include aliens. I mean, their job is to look for any incoming thing out there, anything that moves in space. And this equipment has the ability to see something the size of a grapefruit out there. So NASA is saying publicly that they do not have any ability to see comets. They don't have any equipment. They don't look at comets. They don't calculate comet orbits. And they really don't have much interest in them. Except now and then one of the NASA spacecraft goes by one. They take a few snapshots. Other than that, they really don't do anything or track comets. And I'm going, wait a minute. This is absurd. This is absolutely absurd. And then to cap that up, now this article just came in yesterday, May 4th. Don Yeoman, who's a curator out at JPL, he's one of their top Tier 2 science comet experts, says that now this is what's bizarre. They say that you can get plenty of information about the orbits, etc., from amateur sites. Yet, wait a minute. Let me get this straight. They're saying that, first of all, these quack sites on the internet that tell you that Comet Elenin is Planet X and it's going to crash into Earth and it's going to destroy Earth on all these successive dates. They say, don't listen to those people over there. That's out of one side of their mouth. But on the other side of their mouth, they're saying, oh, there's plenty of amateur photos on the internet that you can calculate orbits from them. NASA doesn't have to calculate orbits or take pictures of comets because there's all that amateur stuff out there, and that's good enough. And I'm going, wait a minute. They're in charge of watching everything in space and determining if it's supposed to crash into Earth and destroy Earth or not, but they're telling you to go look at an amateur website that could be a bunch of cranks and misinformation or who knows what, and they're saying that's where they get their information to determine orbits? Whoa! Excuse me. What am I missing here? What am I missing here, Don Yeomans or the other people at the top of the NEAR program at NASA? You don't have equipment to look at comets and asteroids, and you're running a program that's supposed to tell us where all of the dangerous asteroids are and what their possibility of crashing into Earth and destroying it with the ultimate destruction of the human race, and you're saying we should go to an amateur website, and that NASA doesn't look at photos, doesn't take photos, never really had much interest in comets. Well, they did this back in the 1990s with a comet called Hale-Bopp. They repeatedly denied that the Hubble Space Telescope took any pictures at all of Hale-Bopp. Why would NASA take any pictures of the biggest comet in history that lasted for 6 years, visible to the naked eye? Why would NASA take any pictures of that? Well, it turns out that we had some researchers who went in and dug up the NASA contracts, and they had full real-time video taken with the Hubble Space Telescope and with many other telescopes. So don't tell me that NASA doesn't take pictures of pictures of comets. They do it all the time. They have programs that the entire program is set up to do that. So the question is, the ultimate question here is, why the denial of NASA denying that they would take pictures of comets? Why the denial? Obviously, people in NASA have been told, don't tell the public. Do not tell the public that we take pictures of comets. Yet, they would be in charge of telling you, say that a big raging comet came into the solar system and had potential to do damage or was seen to be this monstrous object out there. Why would NASA be priming the pump, so to speak, to make the claim that, well, that's just one of those little comets. We really don't watch those. We don't pay attention to those. When they're given in the Near Earth Object Program, NASA has the charter not only to look at them, but to determine their orbits, not just now, but for all future dates. So at any rate, that's a question. That's a question, and once again, just leaves us with that loving name that we like to give NASA, never a straight answer. Let me just talk about, one other quick topic here, radiation levels in Japan, Fukushima parents, this is, I'm trying to look at where this is out of the Guardian, out of the United Kingdom, on Monday, May 2nd. So I want to give reference to where this is from. Fukushima parents send a dish of dirt, excuse me, to administrators. And here's the problem. The limits for radiation in schools has been raised to 20 times the national radiation limits that were set before. This is to allow children to go to school in that area in what is now considered to be safe conditions. And a couple of weeks ago, I reported that the EPA in the United States was having closed-door sessions to increase the limits on radiation, the acceptable limits on radiation for the public, by, in some cases, hundreds of times, just so they could say, oh, well, radiation is within specified limits. And in some cases, the equivalent of many, many x-rays. And as I reported a number of weeks ago, an x-ray is not a good standard because typically, unless it's absolutely necessary, you don't x-ray kids. You don't x-ray pregnant women. You don't x-ray women who might be potentially about to become pregnant. You just stay away from that completely because the genetic damage that can be done in the short term. So at any rate, this is. I just want to report this. The other issue is that the radiation reporting is obviously just fallen off the map in the United States. The story about the alleged killing of Osama bin Laden taking front page, and why that should be the front page news for such a long time, it's also keyed off of a lot of people who are starting to bring up the issue of who caused 911, etc. But the issue, as I said before, I don't want to get into that. There are many radio shows doing a good job of covering those issues. But the point is that the radiation in the United States is not being reported. And the accumulation over periods of time, I'll have to see if I can make movements to get equipment where we can start actually measuring and reporting. Radiation measurement takes serious equipment and serious time, serious laboratory equipment. It's not something that you just stick a Geiger counter out the window and see what the reading is. So, it takes very serious equipment and controlled observation, etc. So, needless to say, I don't exactly have that at my disposal. So, okay, with that said, I'm going to start talking about the main science topic. And by the way, the radiation, the universal ChemRad oil radiation filters, we still have in stock and are keeping ahead of orders. Just done a good job of anticipating this time. And so the issue is just getting them packaged and out the door. So at any rate, that is something that people are ordering. People are ordering by mail order. Let me quickly give the mail order address. That's for the universal ChemRad oil filter. The mail order address is JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, Minnesota, 55392. That's JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, Minnesota, 55392. And the filter itself, the pre-filter, is $199. That includes shipping to the 50 states. And then the accessory set, which is extra powders. These are food and medical grade powders that are put in the filter to pre-filter water before it goes into your stainless steel or plastic water filter. This fits any standard manufacturer, any make or model of water filter on the market. And so the accessory kit is, I believe, $89, and that also includes shipping to the 50 states. And just make sure you go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, short for jmccanniescience.com. Okay, talking about earthquakes. Wow. Just to start out with, Alaska. Just let me get my notes here. This just reported today, in fact, earlier today. Mexico, Alaska, and Japan, with the largest being a 5.8 in the state of Guerrero in Mexico. Alaska, Japan, and Mexico all reporting earthquakes in just today. So what's going on? Are these man-made? Are they natural? Well, the Earth has been active for quite a long time. It would not be anywhere near as active if it had not been for the earth-shattering event of, I will just put it, within the last 10,000 years, when a large comet came through the solar system and ravaged Earth. It also ravaged some of the other planets, including Mars. Mars had a great deal of devastation from this passing comet, and it's very clearly reported in the history, in the texts, the ancient texts. So, at any rate, the Earth's crust, mantle, is very active with earthquakes, volcanoes, etc. And these are constantly shifting. When one earthquake occurs many times, it moves plates and moves plate boundaries to the point where other earthquakes are triggered, because one triggers another. So you can see right there that earthquakes are not simply localized events. They are very global events, in a sense. They are one area of the Earth affects the other. And so this would lead one to believe that if one could do some trigger mechanism, so let's analyze, say, an earthquake in Mexico. Let's take an earthquake in Mexico. It goes off, or is one in Japan. Okay, it goes off, and then hours, possibly within the next day, this shifts the plates in around the Aleutian Islands of Alaska, or south of Anchorage, where the earthquake was today, that there is enough juggling and moving, enough after effect, to initiate an earthquake someplace else, thousands of miles away. Well, clearly, the effect thousands of miles away of a given earthquake would be very small. So what we're looking at are very small but well-placed triggering mechanisms to cause earthquakes. Now, it wouldn't take man long, given his devious nature and warlike nature, to figure out how to cause earthquakes, man-made earthquakes, because all you have to do is find one of those small triggering events and reproduce that in some manner to cause an earthquake. So, one of the big questions, now, for example, I've talked about the Japanese earthquakes being man-made. Why would I think that? Well, to have 51 major 6.0 or above earthquakes in exactly the same location on a given day is just, beyond probability. You look at the other major earthquakes around the Earth, and sure, you get aftershocks, but you don't get 51 of them, all of 6.0 and above. Because what happens is when the first major earthquake occurs, like in Japan, pushing 9.0 on the revised Richter scale, remember that would be like a 10.0 on the old Richter scale, and that's always very strange too. Why would somebody adjust the Richter scale, the measurement tool that we have to measure earthquakes, why would somebody adjust that? if we're having bigger earthquakes, what's the big deal? But as we head into possibly an era with man-made earthquakes that are much bigger, it kind of takes the pennies or Sears Roebuck philosophy of saying 1995 or 99.95. It just doesn't seem like $100. That 99 just makes you think 90 less than 100. But it's just a little more politically palatable, you might say. And so it's the same way with earthquakes. If they can give you a factor of 10 reduction in the earthquake, what would you call it, the name or the label that you put on it, when it's really 10 times bigger, that would make people think, well, gee, that was just a 7, you know, or a 6 or an 8 or whatever, when really it was much bigger. Okay, so the point is, what kind of triggering mechanisms are out there to induce earthquakes? And right now, the United States, I would say, if somebody were to pull a natural event or a so-called the illusion of a natural event in the United States, I would put it in there's been so much emphasis on the New Madrid fault line that people are ready for it. The Homeland Security had a number of drills that they went through to get people ready for this. So people are mentally primed so that if it happens, they can go, oh, well, doggone, we predicted that earthquake, and isn't that something? It happened. So what I'm saying is that what I want to do is preempt this possibility of man-made earthquakes in the New Madrid around St. Louis, Missouri. I want to preempt this with the discussion of how earthquakes are made by man. What can they do? And I'm going to give three major examples. And of course, everybody has heard of the term HARP. The technique that I talk about that really doesn't get much attention, unfortunately, and for good reason, is because it's the newest, best method of dealing with earthquakes. And that is satellite laser pulsing. It's the tool of choice for creating hurricanes and foul weather. And so, for example, when all of the bad weather rolled through the southwestern or the southeastern United States in past weeks, that was my guess that these were man-made satellite assisted. When the four hurricanes cruised through southern Florida a number of years ago, satellite laser assisted. When Hurricane Katrina marched up from the south, once again, satellite laser assisted. And if you look at, say, a year ago or so, the five hurricanes that marched through Cuba, satellite laser assisted, basically a military assault on the island of Cuba. So at any rate, satellite lasers can also be used to induce earthquakes. The third method I will talk about is deep drilling nuclear tactical bombs set off underground. These could be drilled and placed years in advance and be ready to go at the push of a button. So, for example, the 51 earthquakes in Japan, those could have been placed there by the U.S. Navy, who knows, a long time ago, or recently, who knows, it's hard to say. The equipment that is available for this type of activity, the average person on the street just doesn't happen to have handy. This is something that's very specialized, it takes very specialized tools. And in a lot of cases, remember that one might say, well, gee, how could you have all these guys on submarines and they wouldn't know what's going on? You have to remember that in the military, everything is compartmentalized. People simply don't have access to information. And this brings up a simple point that I wanted to make this past week. And I was going to make the point. What does the killing or the alleged killing of Osama bin Laden and NASA going to the moon, what do those two events have in common? Well, they have something very major in common in the scientific sense. They both lack third independent party verification. Now, it would be like the hometown team with the hometown newspaper going off and saying that they played a football game. The hometown team plays a football game and they come back with a glorious win. But nobody went to the game and nobody saw it. And the newspaper reports it, but there was no third-party independent verification of any type. So the question is raised, well, how do we know that the hometown team won? Or that they even played the game? Oh, how could you question that? That's the hometown team. Well, it's the same situation. There was no third-party independent verification of any kind with the alleged killing of Osama bin Laden, as the same with NASA claiming that it went to the moon. I remember when NASA was, just a quick aside, NASA was supposed to have a satellite that orbited the moon, and that was going to be the final. They were going to have pictures, close-up pictures of all the moon landings and show those Apollo craft there and the footprints of the astronauts that should still be there. But wait a minute. Nothing ever appeared after all of the fanfare. They showed some pictures with like a 4-pixel smudge in what appeared to be a pencil line kind of scribbled around where the astronaut supposedly walked, and they go, there it is, there's proof. And I'm going, wait a minute. This is supposed to be low altitude, high resolution pictures of the moon. Satellites orbiting Earth can take a picture, and you can go on Google Earth and you can see the house number on your house from just standard satellite photos. You can see the car in your driveway. You can see the boat in your backyard. You can see all kinds of details on Google Earth. Do you think the military has something better than that? Well, I hope so. Do you think that with no atmosphere around the moon and the best photography equipment available to man, supposedly being sent up in recent years by NASA, that the best thing they can produce is a little 4-pixel smudge on a picture and a couple pencil scribble lines on a picture and say that's it? Well, what's the problem? Well, it wouldn't match all of the scenery around the moon landing, wouldn't match all the rocks and all of the other structure that you would see in the alleged moon pictures, which are all over the place, which are available supposedly all over the internet and people have them stored, etc., etc. So how could NASA release pictures of this, you know, high-resolution photography of the moon and the lunar landing sites when none of it would correspond? Well, absolutely, it would be ridiculous, so they didn't release anything. But once again, it begs the point. There was no third-party verification. And so, once again, when you come to people with equipment that was purchased for defense purposes, and they're using it for malicious purposes against populations, how is anybody going to know? All you can do is look at the side effects. All you can do is look at what would be the obvious side effects. So, okay, let's talk about HARP, then I'll talk about the satellite laser, and then I'll talk about deep drilling nuclear tactical bombs to set off naturally appearing but man-made earthquakes. Okay, talking about HARP, here is basically what HARP is. It is a radio transmitter, and it has the ability to send beams of energy around the world, and it can reflect like a radio signal. My shortwave radio signal is heard around the world because it basically bounces off the ionosphere and can move around the world. And so people right now all over the world are hearing my voice. HARP is the same way. And it can be focused by transmitting with certain frequencies and certain directions and certain polarizations. It can be focused on a given area. And what does it do? It can change the state of the ionosphere. It can also interact with metallic particles in the air, etc. There's all kinds of experiments that have been done doping the atmosphere with different types of chemical elements or metals and to see exactly what the effect would be. But basically, if you pulse an area, pulsing is something also that Tesla was talking about, that if you take an area, now let's take the walls of Jericho. This is a biblical story, just to prove to illustrate a point. The invading army set up a cadence of soldiers walking around the town of Jericho, and they all marched on a certain cadence, run, 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 all stepping at the same time, marching around the city. Soon the city walls began to crumble, because basically they had figured out the resonant frequency of the ground, and this caused every step built up and added to the energy in the vibration in the earth. And so thousands of men marching around the city in cadence was enough to cause the city walls to come tumbling down. The same situation occurs in the earth. If you can find a mechanism to pulse, in this case with HARP, the atmosphere above the ground in a certain area, and you can relieve the atmospheric pressure and then let it drop back down. These are just very simple, rhythmic. Let's take another example that everybody can understand, is the swing. You sit on a swing, or your kid sits on a swing, you get behind the swing and you give it a push. Okay, then every time the swing comes back, you give it another push. You're not putting all the energy into that swing all at once. You're pulsing it. Now the swing goes higher and higher and higher and higher on a certain cadence, on a certain rhythm. It's a pendulum, basically. This is how pendulums and clocks work. A grandfather clock has a pendulum, and it swings back and forth. There is a little driving device that uses energy from weights on cords that goes and drives. Every time that pendulum comes back, it drives a little bit of energy into that pendulum to keep it going and to overcome the normal resistance of the works of the clock. And so that keeps the clock going, and the pendulum of the clock keeps a rhythm, and if it's designed properly, then that's going to keep time for you. Okay, so at any rate, the same situation with the Earth. And as I said, you don't need a lot of energy to kick off an earthquake. You just need a cadence. You need something that's there continually driving that boom, 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 that constant rhythm. Boom, boom. And with that, you can cause an earthquake any place in the world using HARP. Now, HARP has one issue, that it does not work very well for underwater earthquake situations. Because the water, what's going to happen, you know, with the atmospheric pressure change, that's going to affect waves in the water, but it's not going to get down, you know, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 feet, or and then affect something many thousand feet below the surface of the landmass, which sits under the ocean. So with an ocean, that also that pulsing would spread out. So HARP itself is not a very effective way to create earthquakes under the ocean, as with the Japanese earthquakes. Let me give some examples of naturally occurring earthquakes that occurred after hurricanes. There's enormous number of examples of this. It's happened in Japan. It's happened in China. It's happened, for example, the Hawaiian Islands. I forget the name of the hurricane. A number of years ago, it was coming into the southern region of the Hawaiian Islands. And it was first charted as being a full-blown hurricane. They got everybody ready. And it was up to hours before the National Weather Service was saying, get ready, this hurricane is coming, and it's going to hit the big island of Hawaii coming in through the southern end. And I was watching this on the satellite, and it was the most amazing thing to watch. And this was a, of all appearances, a naturally occurring hurricane. I'm not saying that this one was man-made, but here's what happened. As that hurricane moved up towards almost about 100 miles offshore of the southern tip of the Hawaiian Islands, of the Big Island of Hawaii, the hurricane jumped about 60 miles northeast and disintegrated. And there was a slight wind and a little bit of rain that actually hit the island. About an hour later, there was a 5-point-something earthquake 6 kilometers under the ground off the shore of Hawaii. And here's what happened. There's a small island that's being built up from lava under the water. It's just about to break water, the surface of the water. And not quite so you can buy real estate there, but it's going to hit pretty soon. Now, the hurricane, which is actually an electrical discharge to the ionosphere, not caused by warm water, according to standard theory, but what happened is that hurricane discharged to that island, and then the electrical current passed down about 10 kilometers into the earth, where it followed very narrow channels down into the earth and caused that earthquake. It was an electric current that caused and triggered that earthquake. That is exactly how laser satellites can be used to pulse and trigger earthquakes under the ocean. The third method, which is much more surefire, is that deep drilling, nuclear tactical bombs drilled into the surface of the ground and or through the surface drilling and down. They remember that they can go up to basically 20 miles deep with drilling. They do it with oil all the time. So it would be child's play to use that same type of drilling to put and stagger nuclear bombs along fault lines. This would be much easier to detect because you would see the pulse of the nuclear bomb and then the actual earthquake. But that's why I said that the Japanese earthquakes with 51 6-point and above earthquakes all in the same place, see, it doesn't make sense naturally, because a big earthquake would move a lot of terrain under the ocean. And certainly you could get a tsunami out of that. That's not a problem there. But then you would not continue to get the 51 other earthquakes of that magnitude. You would have aftershocks from a naturally occurring earthquake. So the question is, could any of these methods be used in the United States? And the answer is yes. One other target point might be the Yellowstone caldera, where all it would have to do is breach that water, where it would flow down into the magma, turn into steam, and you would have the world's greatest volcano and earthquake scenario. I'm out of time here. I will be back next week with more reporting. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.